It's 1890, and the citizens of Boston are beginning to go missing in the fog. Police are confused, the public is frightened, and the city is on the edge of hysteria. It's up to the mysterious Smith, inventor and adventurer, to figure out what's going on with the help of his assistant, April Malone. We'll have to face off against a secret society, corrupt policemen, and a mad psychologist hell-bent on dissecting Smith in order to solve the mystery of what's going on and to save the city from a more sinister threat. It's The Chronological Man, The Monster in the Mist, a fast-paced 45,000-word tale of science adventure, written by Andrew Main. And it's available to you for only $1 on the Amazon Kindle store. Download it on your Kindle, iPad, or any major phone, including iPhone, Android, BlackBerry, and Windows 7. Either way, don't miss The Chronological Man, The Monster in the Mist, available for only $1. Bandwidth for the Weird Things podcast provided by WiredTree. For sites of any size and world-class customer service, head on over to WiredTree.com.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, weirdlings and weird things and weirdos, welcome to the Weird Things podcast. I'm Andrew Main, joined by Mr. Brian Brushwood.
I am 35 feet tall in my imagination.
True fact. And Mr. Justin Robert Young.
Hi, everybody.
Wow, that's a great intro, Justin. Very original.
He walks out from behind the curtain, waving his hands with nothing but innocent joy on his face. Hi, everyone. I'm Justin Robert Young.
Innocent joy. That's what they call it now.
My unbridled innocence.
All over my face.
Oh, all right. Why take it? You're better than that, Andrew. You don't got to work blue.
Brian said it. So, gentlemen, it is Halloween Eve.
All Hallows Eve.
As all the spooky potents have pointed to, the dark mischief happens on Halloween Eve.
Hey, am I remembering right? Was it 2 years ago that we did our Houdini seance?
2 years ago, yep.
2 whole years ago? Can you believe the whole adventure that we've had has been just in the spirits? They did it all in 2 years. I can't believe it, dude. That was
because last year we did you and Chad in the haunted Wisconsin hotel.
Yeah, room 307, I think. Something like that.
Chad was freaked out. Can you explain again just how freaked out Chad actually was?
We were both freaked out, dude. It's like there's no way for you to participate, even with what in all likelihood is a useless gesture to commune with non-existent spirits. If you go all in, I mean, you feel something, and it's awesomely creepy.
I do love the idea of you and Chad as like a Laurel and Hardy kind of team just being like comically terrorized by these ghosts. Ghosts!
Yes.
Hey, Brian, there's a ghost!
That's kind of how it was.
Well, we don't have an exciting experiment to do like we did last time, but we do have some fun things to talk about here. There's been a lot of really weird and strange things going on leading up to this Halloween, and some of our favorite sort of topics that keep creeping up again, inescapably so, have returned yet again. And we talked a long time ago in one of the earliest podcasts, we discussed, you know, if we were to become superheroes, and we brought the idea of was it the Rape Ape?
Yes. That's, you know, like to bring instant vengeance upon his foes.
Yes.
Instant humiliating vengeance.
And since we've talked about that, I like to think that we've inspired a generation of would-be superheroes. There was the documentary series that Justin and I helped produce for G4. We actually got to feature some of these people. Now there are more of these people out there. Recently, Phoenix Jones, the superhero, would-be vigilante, got arrested. We covered this on WeirdThings.com. And he had to get unmasked for his trial, much like a, you know, Bruce Wayne on trial comic.
So I didn't realize that was the same guy that you covered for that.
No. We didn't talk to Phoenix specifically, although I think I do remember seeing him in the research for the superhero thing, because there are like a few, there's a handful of guys, but I think he really made his mark after that episode in particular aired. But no, he is like a legit badass, right, Andrew?
Yeah, like when this, what was great was like, but after he got this, a quick story, there was an altercation and he ended up macing some people and he got arrested, whatever. And then it turns out that this guy is like, he's like an MMA fighter with like a really good mixed martial arts fighter, like a really good record. And, you know, it's like, oh, this guy's genuinely, you know, he'll kick your butt, you know.
That's awesome.
He's out there paroling the streets. And his costume is pretty cool. And, his name, Phoenix Jones. I mean, that's an awesome superhero name.
Well, and what exactly. I loved was how the entire press seemed to play ball with it. They're like, the press all reported that he had to take off his mask, but I didn't see any pictures of it on anything.
Oh, there was some photos.
Well, yeah, those guys are assholes.
Oh, well, you know, listen, news is news. He took his mask off voluntarily. I mean,
I saw the good guys. They didn't show his face. They only showed the face of justice.
But yeah, no, the video's up for what he got arrested for. It's up on Weird Things Now. But if you just search for Phoenix Jones, basically there was a bunch of people that were walking under a bridge. There were a bunch of drunk people. And it looks, to my untrained eye, from the video, that they are fighting, which is what Phoenix Jones contended. The people who were down there said they were just singing songs and frolicking back home from the local watering hole.
There's video that exists of the whole incident?
He has a guy with him, like, filming a lot of what he does, and this in particular, and thankfully so for his trial, because I think the argument is very much in his favor. But he goes down and breaks up the fight, and then in the course of the altercation, he's got, like, six dudes kind of around him, and he winds up pepper spraying them, and he takes more of a beating after that than I think anybody else. There's all these chicks are coming throwing shoes at him, and dudes are trying to get up in his face, and I think he maces one of the guys that comes after him. But he's a dude prowling the streets trying to keep Seattle safe.
It's awesome. That's awesome. Like, It's one thing to, and the first time I ever felt this was when you read about Penn and Teller and Harry Anderson and you find out that they all did street performing. You're like, well, I'm going to perform on the street, and you find a corner, and then you just feel the awkwardness of what in your mind's fantasy sounded like a good idea. And now you're just standing on a street corner. You're like, I'm going to start shouting and see if I can get people to watch me do it some tricks. Yeah. And you just feel dumb. Like, imagine that times a million. And that's what Phoenix Jones is going through every time he dons the cowl and heads out in the streets.
I think partially that. But I was like, because I think some people are like, hey, it's cool. You know, this is a guy that, like, when we talk to these guys, you know, we expected a lot of them just to be totally nuts. And they were. But they were people that very much wanted to do right. They wanted to do good. And when they woke up in the morning or at night, when they went out there to go do what they did, for them, they really wanted to, you know, they wanted to be a force for good. And people have different ideas on how they can do that. You know, some people think like, oh, I'm going to get into politics, which, no, it's a force for people.
Good luck. Yeah.
You know, they can, you know, some people say, hey, I'm going to go into business and create products and services people want, which I think is fine. And other people are like, I want to go out there and I want to help people. If somebody's getting harmed or somebody is getting bullied or beat up or whatever, I want to go there to try to help. And that, I love that. I love that. You know, it's hard, you know, when, like, as Phoenix Jones found out, is that, you know, you learn early on that a lot of fights you can't break up because they're between people who have a stronger attachment to themselves than they do to you.
To each other, you know? Yeah, of course.
I mean, that's hard. When you see, like, a guy and a girl arguing in a parking lot and it gets rough, it's always hard to figure out how to slap
the guy, the girl, she starts hitting on you and you elbow the girl, and before you know it, the cops are there, and you're like, oh, bad. I regret everything.
And you kiss the cop, and then you go over to the guy again.
Yeah, you try to talk it, but you're just making it worse for yourself. He's sitting there judging you with his eyes, and you just think, I'm embarrassed of myself.
You're like,
I should really stop drinking.
And like, Brian, you know, you could have worn a codpiece. Did you just have to go with the thong?
Yes.
And I'm like, and now you're judging my costume. And then you go back home, you think, Brian, Justin, and Andrew wouldn't judge me.
Right. Well, Brian, when you go out there and you call yourself the stripper and you dress as a male stripper.
Exactly.
And your killer move everybody is knows the pole dance of death.
I shout my move. I'm like, pole dance. And then I start just grinding on them. You're like, what? Dude, is
imagine that? Imagine the terror. I'm just like a petty car thief. And I'm like trying to, you know, like Slim Jim a window open. Yes. And all of a sudden, just faintly, like a whisper on the wind.
Wait, that sounds like disco music. No, maybe techno.
Golden!
It's the stripper.
He's on fire.
And then meanwhile, I go up and I'm grooving on him. And meanwhile, Justin
up against the car window.
Justin is he goes by the name the DJ, and he's just like, "That's right, ladies and gentlemen, make sure to tip your waitresses because in just a moment we got the stripper gonna be grinding on your ass all night long while you try to break out of that car."
Somebody walks
Remember,
up to
ladies,
get their car
get your
and they
what's
see,
handy.
You know, they see, like, you know, they see the stripper grooving on some car thief, and then they're like, is this, like, they're afraid that, like, they don't want to seem like anti-gay, so they don't want to say anything, and they're like, well, I gotta get home. This ice cream's going to melt. Yeah. But I want to be very correct about this. What am I supposed to do?
Am I seeing what I think I'm seeing? Are you thrusting justice right on his backside? What is happening?
This guy's like, help! And like, I don't know how these relationships work, you know? And like, back in the mind, it's like, this is a Jeffrey Dahmer thing where, like, this stripper guy's going to murder this guy and eat them? Or it's just the core. If I call it as a quarrel, then the next thing on Boing Boing, they're going to call me like a hater.
Dude, all I imagine is that the person in the back of the car just has his hands, both his hands up, and he's just like, whoa, 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 whoa. And meanwhile, Brian's just grinding on him, just
And meanwhile, like,
cops get there, and Brian just looks at him. Oh, by the way, you're always chewing gum. You're constantly chewing. And he's like, incapacitated him, bro. All yours. And then you just walk away.
I'd like to think also, in addition to, like, I'm doing the grinding, you're doing the DJing, but meanwhile, Andrew's there as the bodyguard, and, like, I'm just secretly daring him to reach back and touch me, because if he touches me, then it's Andrew's job to beat the crap out of him, because he's like,
I'm videotaping this, and I'm selling this on some website you don't know about. You know, it's like the ones where they sell, like, you know, like
thrustinjustice.org.
Videos of guys wrestling, you know, it's for people who are not quite, you know, at terms with their sexual preferences.
Yes. Yes. You're like, oh, I watch it just because the bad guys get caught.
Yeah, it's like cops.
I'm a fan of the thrust and justice is what I like.
Is that the thrust and justice? Is that your name?
That's the name of the DVD series.
I think maybe that's your superhero name, thrust and justice.
No, I'm the stripper.
Yeah. And the worst part is it's like, you know, it's like, and this is all theoretical. I read an article about this. Sometimes in some amateur porn, you know, what's the worst thing to do? You think about it, like, okay, you have to do porn for money. That's kind of bad, okay? If you're the guy in the porn where it's one of those amateur ones where you're the ones that has to watch.
The guy whose job is to watch?
Like the cuckolding porn?
Yeah, I don't know what that is, but yeah, that.
Let's see, a cuckold where you have a gentleman.
No, I know what that is. I didn't know that brand of porn, but yes, Justin.
Oh, yeah, well, that's what it is. So you have a meek gentleman, and he has a lady who's a bit of a filly, if you catch my drift. And then you have another man who's virile, who screws the lady while the other guy just kind of watches in a forlorn nature.
I like the fact that you started off, like, saying a filly, if you know what I mean. And then you're like, and the guy starts banging her.
It's just right into it. His vocabulary ran out.
Yes.
But anyhow, yes, I realize
he starts thrusting justice in a way that she knows she will always remember.
And the
let's keep it clean. So back to Brian and the G-string grooving on some guy in the parking lot.
Yeah.
Brian, what are your other methods? Okay, let's say you look into a supermarket or convenience store and you see a guy with a gun pointed at some guy's like, "Fill up the register now." How do you how does thrust and justice
fill up the register? Please put my bills into the register. Fill it up. These people need change.
That'd be great if somebody was robbing 7-Elevens not to take the money, but just because he had too many ones that he had to get rid of. He's just like, put the money in the register now. Now give me correct change. I gave you $800 in ones.
All right. No, guy's sticking up.
First of all,
let's just say for laughs, a Latin guy.
Okay.
He's sticking up a Fernando.
Fernando is trying
and
to.
And he says, "Hey there, mister. fill up my bag with your money."
Oh, and is he Irish?
Is
Irish? He's a Latin guy. You know, it's that Latin guy's talk.
Yeah. Hi, it's a time. It's
so, Brian, you're walking by now. You're fully clothed. Remember, yes. this is the origin of your superhero was.
First of all, no. I have an identity I have to protect. I'm a husband and a father, so I can't just, you know, pull out my clothing and start, you know, grinding. So instead, what I got to do is I immediately run around to the back of the establishment, crawl in the air vent, make my way to the office where I get a hold of the PA system. Then I make sure to load up a Party Rock Anthem and start it playing.
Party Rock!
Exactly. And they're like,
this is not Miami.
What is going on? And then it just kind of gets a little bit louder, you know? You're like, party something in the house
tonight.
Everybody stab a dude.
Have a good time.
Yeah, exactly. And, so, and then all of a sudden I come out and they're like, wait, could it be? And then all of a sudden behind the poultry, I emerge wearing a G-string.
Wait, do you emerge like that? Or is the loss of clothing part of the superhero revelation?
No. The stripper always shows up
Brian,
in character.
Here's what you do. You go back to the back of the store because you have to protect your secret identity. You get out of your clothes and you put on other stripper clothes.
He puts on a cop uniform.
Yes, he puts on a cop uniform.
And he runs in there like, everybody freeze. And the guy's like, oh no,
right.
It's up. And then, he has to say it
slightly off. So it's like he's just like, hey everybody, the policeman is arrived.
And they're like, man, those are really short shorts on that police officer.
Well, like, they're like, why did
I get on the PA? everybody, who's that? That was a good time.
And I like that the gunman is ready to give up. He sees a cop. He's like ready to give up.
Yes.
But you can't let him give up at this point because the routine has not even started.
No, I know. Yeah, well, plus it's like it hasn't even gotten to the part where the techno, the tweet, 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 tweet starts up, right? And so it's like I'm kind of walking all sassy there. And meanwhile, I'm grabbing frozen chickens off the side. I'm juggling three of them because well, you got to show some skill early on to grab their attention. And then they're like,
what, for the judges?
Well, you want to get high marks.
He knows the security cameras are watching. This is going to end up on Fox News.
This is going to end up on YouTube. So it's like I got to sell it, right? So it's like I'm juggling the frozen chickens, and then I throw away my Hello Kitty covered nightstick.
I can just see the headline. Juggling ball jiggler breaks up grocery heist.
Exactly. And then
Or vigil jiggle?
Vigilo.
Vigilante.
I'm the Vigilo is what I want to be called. And then I freaking dazzle him with my thrust and justice. And then
I just like the idea too that you're gonna get all these lonely women are gonna start committing crimes. Yes. You know?
Yeah. And they're all excited, like,
oops, look at me, I've shoplifted the paint can.
It's like these bachelorette parties are going to, like, you know, start looting and robbing. And
you're like, officer, somebody stole my big red gum.
The police show up. Oh, no. Wait, take it off. No, wait, you're not thrusting justice.
Yeah. Ba, 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 party rock. that's when you step out, but you always step out. It's like the three amigos. Like your first stance is just a wide stance with two hands on your hips, and that's when everybody just looks over. Party rock!
Yes, and I always start with sort of a little bit of a chicken wing flutter like this, you know, and then I go sauntering towards.
That's a little Mick Jagger, little Mick Jagger chicken wing flutter.
Yes. How did Mick Jagger ever make the chicken Bach move look good?
I don't know, but he's gonna have to make it look good before I pop this lass in the old eye. Now, if you hear what I'm saying, me and the rest of the Latin kings are taking no guff from you, laddie.
Oh
Like, there's going to be, like, the website that follows Thrust and Justice. Like, oh, we hear he's going to debut a fireman costume.
Hey, everybody, the fireman's arrived.
Did somebody Body call it? Rock. Did somebody say it was too hot in here?
Shuffling.
Oh, dude, me and Phoenix Jones will do like a crossover album.
Phoenix Jones is like, stay away from me.
No, I want nothing to do with you.
It's like, it's guys like you that are ruining the gig for the rest of us.
He just looks at you and goes, you're embarrassing.
You are an abomination of vigilante justice is what you are.
Hey, is that a dollar in your G-string?
He's like, well, that could really go to my legal fees. Can I have that dollar?
Yeah. Man, you know what I want to go do is listen to some Waking Elliot. You know that female-fronted alternative rock band formed in late 2009 that immediately established a strong Connecticut following, even before the release of their debut EP, Simply Pathological, which can be found at WakingElliot.com. No, I'm not just reading their bio. You're reading their bio. I love their music. It seems to make soul. Makes my inner child want to get up, slap my other little child, and then they'll hug and kick them. Jesus. WakingElliot.com.
We're almost at the point, or at that point, 7 billion people on the planet.
Hey, congratulations, Earth. You are getting ready to top out. Do you know how scared?
You are really bad at using birth control.
No, we're actually really good. And that's exactly what I was about to say. When I heard that we were going to 6 billion people, I guess I was in what, seventh grade. I can't remember if it was when we hit 5 billion or 6 billion. But I remember being terrified of overpopulation. And really, all of humanity has spent the last 40 years terrified of overpopulation. But instead, it looks like we are on track to level out at around a comfortable 9 billion.
I'm disappointed.
In what? Yeah. America?
I say boo. Boo to that.
I say boo. I say we got a lot of land. I say we could build a lot of cities with really high population. A lot of people love living in Manhattan and Hong Kong and places like that.
Wait, are you serious? Do you think we should have more than 9 billion?
Oh, yeah. Hell yeah, son.
Absolutely.
Wow.
Party Rock is in the house tonight, Brian.
Everybody.
Why can't we have 9 billion people plus? Shuffling.
Okay, so first of all, I think you're right in that we could support many more than we give ourselves credit for. And we talked about this as far back as like the second or third time we even did the Weird Things podcast about how Julian Simon made the famous bet against Paul Ehrlich. Paul Ehrlich was convinced that we were all going to die of famine and that overpopulation would destroy us all. And Julian Simon said, of all of the resources we have at our disposal, none are more valuable than human ingenuity. And he said, the more people you have, the more ability to solve problems you have, and that, you know, more babies is good for everyone. He thought he was crazy at the time, but of course, it turns out he's exactly right. I'm sort of breathing a sigh of relief at the idea of us leveling off at 9 billion, but you guys seem to feel like, screw it, let's go for even more.
Here's my reasons, okay? Number one is, think of really awesome people, okay? And I think like Larry Page, Sergey Brin, Jeff Bezos, industry leaders like Steve Jobs, okay? I think that these are Elon Musk, okay? Craig Vintner, okay? I think all of these guys, Linus Torvald, okay? Go on. There's just a lot. I lean towards technical and science sort of stuff.
Justin
brilliant
Robert
scientists,
Young.
Stephen Hawking.
Yes.
Mick Foley.
Yeah, Mick Foley, Mankind, okay? Mick Speaking Foley. Of Mankind, these people, Tim Berners-Lee. Tim Berners-Lee comes along and says, hey, I have this way to conceptualize this thing people are already using in the form of web pages and this thing that had been around for 20 years, 30 years, you know, longer, explodes because now we can go, oh, it's a page. I can link to other pages, and then I can have a page, and you can have a page, and then what happens when everybody has pages? We have a lot of pages, you know. Mark Zuckerberg, all these people, you know, who've contributed amazing, amazing things, and people who come out of, you know, places you don't expect, like, you know, Temple Grandin, you know, people who have these different scientists and different ways of looking at things or this different approaches towards stuff. I love, I absolutely, absolutely love this. And I just love the idea that I want more brains. I want more creative people. I want more people in the arts. I want more people creating great stuff. You think of all the great books and the great things that you read. And it means more. It means more great movies, more great television, more great books, more great things. That's the first thing. It's great. It's about me. Well, it's all about me.
And real quick, how do you respond to people who have spent their whole life convinced that too many people equals starvation for all? I mean, where do you even begin to explain?
Well, I mean, the difficulty in doing that is that starts with sort of this assumption that people have, nobody here, but, you know, about how where resources come from and how resources are managed. And we've been
this is not like a few benighted, ignorant folk. This is the prevailing. I mean, even today, it's shocking to many people to realize that we're not in danger of overpopulating the earth, or at least the indication, you know. And of course, it's easy to, no matter how well off we seem, to be worried about the next wave. If it's not overpopulation, it's worry about the overcrowding of the middle class. The idea that, okay, maybe there aren't too many people, but there's too many people trying to be middle class suburbanites.
Yeah,
and that's what's going to destroy
the cost of consumption and the effect that has.
Right.
And we've watched as the rest of the world has risen up, and globally poverty levels, if you look at what, you know, we tend to move, we've been moving away from metrics that measure like absolute poverty, because the problem is the rest of the world, even people we didn't think, are starting to move up. And there are people who are very, very poorly off, but the percentage of people in the middle class around the world are increasing. There's a Chinese middle class now that did not exist before.
Right.
You know, in India, the same thing. And that's a growing Chinese middle class. And these were people who were poverty level. Now we talk about income disparity, which is a different argument, and it's dubious in some ways, but it's important. But as we watch people in China start to increase their levels, the people at the bottom don't have less now. There's a problem there. People at the bottom who are being victimized by pollution and other things that happen in industrial countries where those people are in a bad situation. But we've seen the middle classes grow in other countries. We know that the materials we have, we can more efficiently use. There's a lot more of them. You know, we're finding now between our oil shale, you know, our shale gas in the United States, stuff like that. Industrialized pro-market economies tend to grow and succeed in other countries at the bottom of that, you know, that catch up. Africa is booming, by the way. Africa's growth as far as its industrial and its wealth is actually growing, outpacing the United States
now,
and Europe.
Now, I had heard that the biggest problem with Africa was not with the ability of its people to produce. It was with the ability for the government to enforce contracts. Like, there was so much corruption that nobody could do any business. Like, why would you expand to a legitimate business if that would just make you a target for a shakedown by the government?
And also, to add on to that point, I hear the rains down in Africa.
So, and Brian, in answer to your intelligent question, one of the biggest things.
Thank you, Justin. I'm glad you put that in there.
One of the biggest things that changed the economy in Kenya was the cell phone, because up until that point, the telephones were controlled by the army.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So if you wanted a telephone, you actually had to go buy one from the army. And so there was only something like 40,000 or 400,000 telephones in a country of like 40 million people.
Wow.
Okay. Cell phones come along and they change that. And people there use, you know, as forms of currency, they'll use cell phone minutes. And it's absolutely, corruption's been a problem. Every country has that problem. And, you know, you look at historically and people go, oh, it's bad now. No, it's way better than it's ever been. And
right.
But Africa has a booming economy. And so I think, you know, I'm all for more people. And part of the reason, so the first one is, it's for me, it's selfish. The guy that's going to come up with the cure, that's going to cure me of whatever may ail me when I'm 80 or 90 years old, might be some kid that could be born in Kenya or Uganda or someplace like that, who gets a chance, gets access via technology or whatever, to become a scientist and to find that thing. More brains is good, and we all agree that.
Yeah.
Second reason is we have an aging population. If population slows down, we all start to gray. Russia has this problem. Russia is like a negative population growth, and so there are fewer and fewer children. I like kids. Kids are awesome, but do you want to live in a world where there aren't any more kids and it's right. just a bunch of old people?
Well, and more importantly, and I believe it was you that forwarded me that article from The Telegraph in the UK. Is that what it was?
Mm-hmm.
But talking about – and I didn't realize this – With a population replacement of or fertility rate of 2.1, the United States is the only superpower with a positive population growth. Is that right?
I think so. Most of the other, like the north, like the European countries and the northern European countries, are having to resort to, you know, resort. I mean, they're using immigration, which is great.
You know, well, we do as well here in the United States.
Yeah, we do too. But we've been doing that for years, and you know, and that's part of what makes our country great is that we've it's part of our fabric.
Well, and specifically, it's also what puts us in a unique position to outgrow our problems, in that mm-hmm. in that we can make enough babies to to outgrow our debt issues.
Yeah, well, that's one of the things.
I also got to think that, you know, for everybody that worries about what our problems are going to be in a overpopulated world, it seems like we have always managed to make our way. We have cleared more serious, dire hurdles with less when it comes mm-hmm. to the survivability of the human race than, you know, famine or problems with overpopulation, even assuming that we were running out of land.
Well, and for me, it's I have an imaginary conversation with a version of myself who was born in the 1840s, and I say, and we discuss like, hey man, so what are your problems in the future? I'm like, oh man, it's rough. We eat so many calories; it's really tough to keep from being fat. And we also, you know, we have a lot of fake remedies that claim to solve all of our problems, but they're not true. Or it's like I think about the problems we have, and on the great tree of problems for humanity to have, this is a pretty sweet set of them.
And they survived.
Right.
You know, yeah, and, we live and, so and, long. And the human race has survived and evolved and continued to create, for however long. And I think that, like, you know, so this idea of like, oh, it's going to be hard to get food, or, you know, that natural energy resources will deplete. It's like, yeah, we're going to solve these problems because we've always, by the definition of us existing, have solved these problems. Right. And beyond that, I want to live in a Doctor Who universe where the human race just completely dots the galaxy. And the way that we do that is not by saying, well, let's stop populating because, I don't know, 9 million, who wants to get the double digits?
Oh, no, that's a really good point, because it's like, is your goal that we want to hit equilibrium with this Petri dish, or is your goal that we want to freaking crack out of this thing and, yes, sure, we replicate like bacteria. Now let's get to work. And for step one, get out of this Petri dish.
And it's to say that 9 grow. Million is equilibrium with her.
Yeah, and that's a great point. Because when you ask, like, what is equilibrium? And it's like, well, if we stop all development in agriculture, in how we produce food and everything else like that, we might say we're there. But we don't. We don't stop this. We can find out how to get better yields out of acreage. We can find out how to make better foods. You know, we're getting to the point where we're going to start, you know, soon we're going to make meat, you know, in the vat, and be able to take up less square footage than we use for cattle.
And let me tell you, that's delightful and wonderful, and there's nothing horrific about it. And people are like, oh, lab-grown meat, that terrifies me. It's like, well, get over it, because it's protein that's 100%.
Let me eat this sausage here.
Yeah, no, exactly. It's cruelty-free. Like, think about how great the world's going to be. 100 years from now, all of our grandchildren will get to – every year there'll be some kind of contest where they decide the best side of beef in the world, and it'll be some cow in a contest, right? Then they will clone that beef, and the whole world will cheaply and affordably get to eat the greatest beef humanity has ever created. And crazy, the cow will still be alive. The cow won't even be annoyed, because it'll live a long and fruitful life so that it can reproduce and create more clones of itself.
And it'll talk to you.
Yes. You know, and it'll encourage you to eat it.
Well, yeah, and that's you know, it's just kind of ridiculous. We were like, oh, lab-grown meat, that's so gross. Well, see how gross it is when your White Castle slider costs 2.5 cents. Well, see how disgusted you are.
And that's one of the things my hero Elon Musk talks about, is the idea that the next evolutionary step for humanity is to become a multiplanetary species.
Hell yeah.
It really is.
And you think about, and when I think about a trillion people, I think, you know, there is a, I think it was Buckminster Fuller or somebody did some like measured sort of like capacity, how many people you could put on Earth if we lived like we did in Shanghai or New York, Manhattan or whatever. And, you know, you could fit a trillion people, and we could produce the food and everything else to do that. You know, we'd, you know, be stacked on top of each other. But, you know, you know, you look at, you know, how much land does, you know, Ted Turner have? He's got like, you know, 2.2 million acres.
Wow.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's, like, it just seems to me like the fears of overpopulation have been around as long as there's been a population.
Irish people.
Yes. You know, Irish people. Hey, vato, you ready to populate?
Well, I'll tell you, that's it's been amazing for me to have a transformation, you know, living in Texas, you know, illegal immigration has for a long time been a big concern here in town. And growing up, it was always, you know, it was always like, oh, immigration's bad for X, Y, and Z. But learning how fast, learning, number one, that our concerns about immigration are the exact same concerns that have always been around on immigration, you know, for
when our ancestors came here.
Exactly. Like for me in Texas, the concern is about, you know, illegal people coming over from Mexico. But before that, it was, you know, it was the Irish. And before that, it was the Italians. Before that, it was the Germans. And
was the Iroquois going.
Yeah, exactly. Right. Here? But it's by the second generation, they all regard themselves as American, and they acclimate to our culture. They grow up in America and they consider themselves American. And it really fundamentally shifted my attitude about immigration, especially finding out that our fertility rate barely covers our replication of ourselves. Like we rely on immigration to bring in more people here, and we need more people.
Yeah. Come on board. So I'm all pro.
Yeah.
Speaking of,
like, let's get to 19, baby. Let's get to 90 million. I don't give 90 billion. Let's rock.
Time to get political, folks. Yeah. I want you to go ahead, if you live in Savannah, Georgia, to vote 8 a.m. unicorn. That is number 8. Letters A.M. unicorn. Remember, mayor, you tired of the Tea Party? Get ready to vote for the coffee party. It's stronger. Blacker. 8 a.m. Unicorn for mayor of Savannah, Georgia.
Speaking of immigration and population, there was a person who had some very interesting ideas about that. And a new book is coming out, and it's claiming that Hitler lived until 1962.
Dude, you know what's funny is you said that, and I was going to make the joke and say his name was Adolf Hitler. And then it turns out that it was Adolf Hitler.
Yes, that you would have been making a very astute segue.
So British researchers have a book coming out, and they posit that Hitler actually died. And we've heard this before, but actually say they have strong evidence to say that Hitler died in 1962 in South America. And this comes up again. It's a theory that's come around before, and they say they've got new evidence. No forensic evidence, but they say they've got new evidence to that effect. And I will play
vacation
the devil's
photos.
What's that?
vacation photos.
It's just,
of him.
It's just Hitler, Goering, and Himmler like doing the water ski pyramid. Like Hitler's like got his feet on their shoulders and they just got their arms up.
They actually their new evidence is they listened to our podcast about Hitler inside of a shark.
Here's my thing is that I would say Look at how many reports we got of Gaddafi dying. Okay.
Yeah.
Look at when we went to find, you know, Saddam Hussein. The problem we had was, well, did he use one of his doubles? Did he use this or whatever? And you know, we have these, you know, with Osama bin Laden. You know, we have this. There, you know, we say we look for forensic evidence. We find some sort of records. Nowadays, what we do is we have genetic testing, things like that. We do to conclusively prove it. Used to be like Hitler and stuff. Like, well, we looked at dental records. You know, we pulled the dental records from, you know, Austria or whatever like that. But you know, if this is a guy that has a highly capable intelligence network via the SS, you know, can you believe anything? I mean, these were people who were able to place their own, you know, their own people into other countries and stuff like that. I mean, I think he died, you know, the way they said he died. I think, he, you know, he offed himself in a bunker, but kind of got to go, you know, like, you know, if he didn't, if they thought that, not that necessarily they said, oh, he got away and they hid the fact that he got away, but if, you know, they couldn't find a body, but they were sure he was one of the, you know, hundreds of thousands of bodies that were, you know, they found in Berlin or they found there somewhere, but they didn't know who it was, would they be better off just saying, oh, yeah, he's dead?
Wait, so you're talking about like okay, how do we know that he definitely died in that bunker? It's from dental records and what else?
Yeah, I mean, it's dental records, forensic stuff. I mean, that's my understanding of how we, you know, how what our understanding of what that was.
Well, and what I remember hearing was that everyone else did a cyanide capsule, but he took a gun to his head.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Pussy.
Because he's that hardcore, bro.
So you have a...
I'm dying with my nine!
The Russians were the first ones to reach. The Russians insist that, no, he died, you know, in the bunker. The book is called Grey Wolf, by the way. And, you know, basically it's just the escape of Adolf Hitler, and that it was the body doubles of the Fuhrer and Eva Braun were found by the Red Army in the garden of his wrecked chancellery.
You know, the problem is the Russians here, because they're notoriously poor record keepers when it comes to big things that they would rather control the truth on. You know, they do have a record of just making, just you know, kind of hitting the delete button in things sort of, that they would rather not have exist.
Like, yeah, no, no, comrade, we totally found him. He was laying there, and also he had tacky G-string on.
Yes, you know.
Was totally looking the gay.
You know, if Sergei comes back and he's like, oh, crap, dude, it is body double. And they're like, do not say.
Yeah.
No, they're like, Hitler, look at Hitler. We kill him. Yay. Like,
let me give you the Russian story, the Russian version of events. And this is a detail I did not know.
Okay.
The agency, the spy agency, okay, that was responsible for finding his body, by the way.
Yeah.
It's going to sound very familiar, okay? FSB security, Federal Security Services hold the entire Hitler file, chronicling his death and his body's strange odyssey through a variety of graveyards in former communist East Germany until a final cremation in the 1970s. This is the true story of what happened to Hitler, said an FSB spokesman. He died in Berlin, and we have the papers to prove it.
The papers.
Okay. According to bunker eyewitnesses, Hitler and his new bride retreated to a study to end their lives at 3:30 p.m. on the afternoon of 30th April 1945. Afterwards, the corpses were carried up to the garden, doused in petrol, and set ablaze. Also burned in a separate pyre were the corpses of his propaganda chief, Joseph Goebbels, his wife Magda, and their six children, who she murdered with cyanide capsules. What a nice mom. Yeah. Petrol was scarce, and the corpses were only partially burned by the time the Russians arrived. Agents of the Secret Intelligence Service, SMERSH, which stood for Death Despised, that was James Bond's nemesis, by the way.
Oh, really?
Attached to the 3rd Russian Shock Army, found the bodies on May 5th. They were removed and put in a lorry. The following day, an order came to hand over the site to another unit. The SMERSH agents then moved the bodies by truck to the town of Busch near Berlin. According to the files, they underwent a forensic examination at a field hospital, and a letter to the NKVD boss, the pathologist wrote, "In the mouth of the corpses, I found glass pieces, pieces of wall, and of the floor corresponding to material in the bunker. There was a strong smell of bitter almonds, the smell of cyanide, which killed them." Says there can be no doubt that this is the corpse of Adolf Hitler.
All right. Number one, how bizarre is it? Like, how far have we come, considering the kind of figure that Hitler was, that, like, there is a gap of, what, a month? A month's time before word gets out that they have identified the body of a dead, you know, Adolf Hitler, when today we have cell phone video of a rebel shoving a broom in the nether regions of Gaddafi before shooting him in the head, you know? Like,
wait,
like
did that happen?
Yes, that happened. And we knew within 15 minutes that Gaddafi was violated before he was shot. And we have pictures of people with a golden gun that he was brandishing about like a wild madman. You know, like, we know that within a half hour of it happening real time. It took a month for people to identify, like, oh, no, I think this is Hitler. Let's bury him in various...
There are times that I wonder if, like, the whole universe didn't conspire to have me born at exactly the right time. Just at the right time to where I was born into an age where food was relatively plentiful and vaccinations were discovered, and I could live long enough to see the information age flourish to where I could know the difference now between just 30 years from now, when that kind of thing would have been unheard of, for that kind of instant feedback and the you know, the social media revolution. It's amazing the world we live in now, man.
Well, remember, 30 years ago was the 80s.
Yes. And the 80s did not have the internet.
No.
What? The internet? Didn't have the web.
Well, I mean, for the average people.
My geeky friends used to
I did not experience online. The internet until after high school. So it was college in the mid 90s.
Nah, I had a friend that ran a BBS. We used to play.
I ran a BBS.
When did you run a BBS?
When I was in eighth grade. I used the Tag BBS software. It was called the Digital Underground. And if you went there, it had an ASCII version of Humpty from the Humpty Dance on it.
Oh, my God.
The Digital Underground.
Now, you know, the hilarious part is that, you know, we actually have listeners who will go, BBS.
But we also
Was that the show that you did before at SMW?
That's the people that make Doctor Who.
But you know what? Thankfully, there are also people who'd be like, wow, I might have been to that BBS. It was in the Houston area, you say?
So you got Hitler. Let's say he's in Argentina. Okay.
Sure. Right.
Now, part of the attraction, and by I mean attraction, I mean the interest and not like the interest of an idea of like Hitler living is the idea that like, it's the sequel, you know, the sequel nobody wants. But you're Hitler, you're in Argentina, you're hiding out. And I mean, of course, we all know that it's impossible that a country that's fascist or slightly unfriendly to the United States could possibly hide somebody whom we considered a criminal and were out to find for years. We know that could never happen. The guy could never like get away for 10 years without us being able to find them, because no country would actually help or harbor or assist anything like that. It would never happen.
This is weird that you're saying this, Andrew, because it sounds like you're referring to a specific incident tongue in cheek, as though, okay.
How? Yeah, because everybody would step forward because they all agree with their foreign policy and don't feel that, you know, any reason to disagree.
But no, I see where you're heading. And the question is, what does Hitler in hiding in Argentina do with his social free time?
That's the thing I'm thinking. It's like that. You go like, oh, and you know what? Because here's the thing. Like, oh, you know what? Hitler went to Argentina. And then what did he do?
Needlepoint.
Played cribbage with Ava.
I see him more as a bowler type.
Why can't I get any spades? This card sucks.
Oh, I wonder, like, is he like writing angry editorials and stuff, you know, defending his legacy under another name?
He's writing really pointed letter to the editors. Like, he's the guy that like his local grocery store has like a comment box, and like every week there's only one slip of paper, and it's always handwriting. Your mangoes could really be kept more fresh.
No, I mean, is he still trying to like, is he using an assumed name and trying to like write into the New York Times or the Munich or the London Times or whatever? And like,
oh, so you think he's
you have
trying
it all
to get
along. Is he like one of like, we there's a pattern we've seen of celebrities in art in magic who will use aliases to comment on blogs that we may or may not run.
I like, as we're all aware, this is something that just happens. We wouldn't have any firsthand experience at iTricks.com.
Let's just say that we may run a blog. Let's may say that one of the people we talk about is a person of note who is a very, very, how should we say it, insecure person about his...
He's a firebrand is what he is.
Yeah.
That's the firebrand alarm going off.
And we get comments from a person that seems to we have very good reason to believe it is this person.
Oh, we know it's this person.
We know it's this person.
And it's a vector, several triple confirmed vectors of reasons.
Here's the problem is that people may suspect that they know who the problem is, but the problem is the only vector they have is that he's a magician and insecure, which means pretty much he's a magician.
It's you, Brian. It's you.
Yes, exactly.
That is all we'll leave it at for right now, because this person could be litigious.
I will verify it is definitely me.
Yeah, and it's not one of the talented ones. So anyhow, point is, we've seen this, and this has happened before. Now, the guy who does Whole Foods, John Mackey, who I think is a pretty neat guy, but you know, he was
totally
a guy that was
cool
anonymously commenting about his own stock, right? So I'm
there
just
was,
saying, like,
there was Olivia Newton-John's ex-husband. You guys ever hear this?
No.
Like, he faked his own death.
What?
And then got caught because they found he was checking like when they had a lead that somebody reported that he was still alive, he was living in his place. They looked into it and found the corresponding IP address was a constant visitor and commenter on a site set up to find him.
No.
And he was giving them false information.
What? I want to fake my own death.
Yeah. So it's usually a bad idea to try to affect your own. I mean, if you're going to try to affect your own relationship
online, now let's talk about this.
It's not like Hitler ever had a bad idea, Justin.
Okay. Now, yeah. No. Okay. You turn the lens on ourselves here. How would you do it? Either of you guys.
If I was Hitler and hanging out in Argentina, what would I do?
If you are Justin Robert Young and you wanted to fake your own death right now, like you know that there's a reason in the next 30 days your personality needs to die, what would you do?
I mean, wouldn't it seem like the easiest way is to just leave and cut off all communication, like don't use your credit cards, like, you know, get a new identity. Like, I mean, if you just disappear, people are going to write in how you died.
Well, let me ask you a question. Let's say you came over to my place while I wasn't here and you saw like a wall filled with like this Seven sort of thing about how I'm going to murder you, Justin.
Okay. Yeah, all of a sudden you became convinced.
Let's say theoretically that's happening.
Yeah, okay. Just assume that, and so you realize that, like, I'm connected to the mafia, or so I'm gonna whack you. You realize that, like
you definitely have a clear and imminent threat of death upon you from your former BFF / employer.
Well, we could still be friends. It could just be some sort of crazy nut thing.
Jeez, why do you have to make it a personal thing, Brian?
I'm gonna wear your skin, Justin, so we can be one person.
But even, all right, so even then, like, I mean, maybe drive my car into something or light it on fire.
What is that?
How would lighting your car? This is the weakest fake your own death plan I think I've ever heard.
Well, because here's my point. My point is that I don't think that anything I could do would not ultimately leave a telltale sign that I fake my own death. I think the easiest way is to just scoot out of town and then let somebody else say, like, oh, I bet you probably drove his car into a canal or something.
No, okay, look, here's what you do is you announce loudly to people. Let me tell you how I would do it, okay? We're getting close to the wintertime. I would go up to the north, and I'd announce loudly that, I'm going to try to do the Minneapolis to Seattle drive. And I don't care how cold it is. And then you're able to go, and then, you know, you crack open the rental car, you throw, you know, a bunch of clothing around, you make steps in the snow, and then you go off. But meanwhile, you got tons of cash on you on hand, and you cease using any electronics at all from that point forward. You got to spend a good 2 or 3 years
so
pretending to be a street person, like hobo, full on crazy hobo person living on money on the streets, where you never mention anything about your previous life.
So wait, so your brilliant plan is to heighten your visibility to the point where you are national news and the manhunt for you is national news. So people on the street where you're going to be exclusively out in public can be like, hey, you look like that missing hiker, Brian Brushwood.
No, because I've already shaved my head by that point.
And that's going to really throw people off. You look like Brian Brushwood with cancer.
Yes. I'm telling you. And I'll tell you what, I will not be a chatty homeless person.
That's the worst plan ever.
No way. It's perfectly good. Number one, it gives a plausible thing because that's the way a lot of people, they get caught in snowdrifts and they go out.
Why do you need to make it a big thing? Why don't you just tell your mom and Bonnie, hey, I'm going to go do this thing. So when, you know, you don't show up, they can tell the police, oh, he was doing this big hiking thing. I'm worried about him. You don't need to make it a big thing, because I mean, if it's gonna get, you want as little news coverage as possible so people aren't looking for you.
No.
And don't know what faces.
Dude, magician safe, you want to hide it, paint it red. I would paint this thing way red. What would you do, Andrew?
I think that's an interesting idea. I think that it's certainly better than Justin's. It depends, like, you know, one thing is, and the thing we didn't really kind of back up on was that the first thing you ask, if all of a sudden, you know, you go off and you go hiking, you go missing or whatever, and Bonnie reports you missing, they're going to ask, you know, first they're going to go is like, all right, they're going to want to know, did she kill you? They're going to know, did you embezzle a lot of money? They're going to start asking all these questions around to see if there is a motive for you to have done that, you know, because that's going to be the thing. Maybe he's missing. Maybe it's accidental or not. So, but I mean, the idea of making it look like this accidental thing is a good thing, but they're still going to kind of be like, well, let's see. Cause there's been cases like that where people have done like, they go fly an airplane and like, oh, I died. And then, you know, and they land it somewhere else. And, you know, like, oh, I crashed in the ocean. So that's a big part of it is like, if I've like embezzled a bunch of money or something like that, like if I've like just ripped off, let's say like, you know, Weird Things was making mad money somehow. I have no idea. Like, we got an anonymous donation.
We were making crazy bitcoins.
Bill Gates one night was just high out of his mind and just, like, PayPal'd me, you know?
Yes.
Like, $100 million, okay?
He's just like, listen, you guys are some funny MFers, and here's 0.01% of my empire.
Yeah.
Yeah. Bill Gates,
are you high?
Maybe. And I'm like, I changed the password right away so Justin can't see, because for our company PayPal, he knows. He's like locked out. I'm like, don't worry about it. So I've got to embezzle. So I've just embezzled money, okay?
Yep.
Here's the problem, okay? The problem is I've embezzled money. So the first thing they're going to, like, Justin's like, hey, Andrew, I don't know what happened to him. They're going to go like, well, we looked at the PayPal account and there's like $100 million missing. And he's going to be like, Justin's like, I'm going to kill that guy, you know? But anyhow,
yeah.
And they arrest him. No, here's what you got to do. If you've embezzled money, you got to make it look like somebody else wanted you dead, and somebody may have succeeded at that. So
you would fake a murder? This is even worse than my idea.
What's that?
This is worse than my idea. Like, Justin was all, I mean, because Justin was harping on me because there was too much of a spotlight on me.
Yeah, but Brian, there already is. Remember, I stole $100 million. Okay, that's the whole point. I've already got that $100 million. There's a spotlight. Where did this $100 million go? Remember that. That's the problem. The spotlight's already there because of the $100 million. I'm saying how would I murder myself how would I fake my death, pardon me, depending upon the situation? If it's a case of where I've embezzled a bunch of money and there will be a spotlight already, this is
then,
the plan.
Yeah, okay. I know. I can see that. Hey, speaking of which, we should do a whole episode on D.B. Cooper at some point.
Yeah. Well, you want to know how I'm going to fake my death?
Go ahead.
Go.
Okay, I'm going to, over like several days, okay, I'm going to draw blood, okay? I'm going to draw my own blood into like 2-liter bottles, okay? More than what, you know.
You're going to have a body's worth of blood splattered everywhere. Do I think there's no way? And then all the DNA will be yours, and they'll be like, there's no way he survived. Look at all this blood.
Yeah, and it's going to be like, and the way I'm going to do it too, it's going to be like, I'm going to have like a couple drops like in my living room here, in my, you know, my here in the desk, on the chair or whatever. And there's going to be a couple drops. And then I'm going to like pour several gallons into the grass and the dirt out by my house, in front of my house. Okay. Because they're going to follow it rather than, oh, there's blood all over that looked like it was just poured blood. This blood on the, they're going to go dig up the ground and they're going to go look at the amount of blood in the ground. Like, man, it sounds like they stabbed and they slit his throat right over here.
Dude, I don't know. It seems to me like they're going to know enough about blood splatter platter.
That's why I'm not doing splatter. Remember, all I'm doing is one or two drops inside my house. And to avoid the splatter problem, I'm going to just put it in the grass. You know what I'm saying? In one area there. So that's my whole thing, is to avoid the splatter
blood
problem.
Splatter grass specialist, right. I'm thinking.
They're that good, I don't know. You know, or here's another way to avoid the blood splatter thing, okay? Is you go pour it down your bathtub drain. Okay.
Wait, will they look for that kind of thing?
Oh yeah, they'll look for that.
Oh yeah.
They look down the drain?
Oh yeah, that's if they,
well, that screws up that plan.
I lived in a neighborhood where somebody got decapitated in a house
what?
That I used to spend the night in. Okay.
What?
I had nothing to do with it.
What?
So what happened was nice middle class neighborhood, really nicely kept. People bought this house. So one day,
what?
Garbage bag shows up in the front yard of this house.
No.
Inside the garbage bag is a head. The head belongs to the husband of the guy that lived in the house. The police were
I'm sorry, the husband of the guy who lived in
the woman who lived in the house, okay?
Gotcha.
Okay? Right. They look at it, wow, there's a head. And they're like, oh, okay, this is the husband that used to live in, they lived in the house. And they're like, this is pretty odd. Police are like, they're not stupid. And they're like, well, who's our first suspect? Well, let's look at the wife. They go in there with their little, you know, protein sprays and the ultraviolet light, and they see blood spatter all over. They knew, they could tell that he was murdered and decapitated in the house. And what it was, this woman had a boyfriend. It was drug dealers. And she decided that she was going to, you know, they were going to rip off the husband, take a bunch of money, and they were going to murder him. And they murdered him in the house.
Yikes.
Which, and I'd spend the night at, you know, years before. That's a neat feeling.
Dude, that's not right.
No. So anyhow, but I mean, they can look for that. So I'm saying is, but they will, if somebody goes murdered, we think he may have been murdered. They think they may have moved the body out of the house. But like, leave a little blood, imply the idea that I met a horrific thing by other people who wanted the money.
That's crazy. All right. Done and done.
It's a truth. And that's why, Justin, I need a vigilante to rescue me.
You don't have a realistic idea, Justin. You don't want to recant your previous.
To be honest, I still believe the best way is just get out of your own way. Just disappear. Don't tell nobody. Get the hell out of here. Get on the bus, Gus.
You don't need to be coy, Roy.
Pick up the key, plan. Lee.
Just get a new plan, Stan.
I mentioned this before. Matt Finley, who wrote a bunch of content on Weird Things when we first started, he once wrote a column that was 50 more ways to leave your lover. and it was just all those like rhyme couplings. And my favorite among them was sell her into white slavery, Avery.
Some people can't wait for excellence or mediocrity. I don't know which one. Jorge Veliz was going for, but he really wanted this episode to come out, so he sponsored the podcast and he just wanted us to give a shout out. There we go. Jorge Veliz. Sounds like a shortstop, is actually a Weird Things sponsor.
Hey, man, ladies, you want to do some picks?
Yeah, let's do some picks.
Pick 'em. Hey, we have not talked on this show because the last episode we did was before it happened, but a very important figure by the name of Steve Jobs died, and I would like to make his biography by Walter Isaacson my pick, but also kind of a jumping off point of just what we were going to say something about Steve Jobs. I think we talked about him a crap ton on the show, right?
What was your favorite part about the book?
I haven't read it yet, but we pick things we haven't read all the time.
I've never picked anything I haven't read. Never.
No, you know what? Actually, I'm going to defend Justin here. I'm going to say you can make your pick because you're excited about a book, and I do want to. And
you picked trailers before, Andrew.
But the important thing is, oh my God, you're sitting there reading the book right now, you son of a biscuit.
Yeah, I'd love to maybe on a future episode do it as a pick if I enjoy the book and think it's worth reading, but I can't now because somebody who hasn't read the book has decided to do it as the recommendation.
Okay, first of all, I'm on Justin's...
Doesn't even own a copy.
First of all, I'm on Justin's side because we could pick something.
Yeah, you're the guy that, like, go see Real Steel. Let me know if it's any good.
Well,
and it is. It's really good.
I was about to say, it was good, wasn't it?
Just because Weiner McGee's here, I'm going to pick something that's already been picked before, and I'm going to say it's Real Steel, because I really like Real Steel, and I'm going to say something about Real Steel right now. If you like sports movies, and you really like sci-fi stuff, and that is not a large gray area on a Venn diagram, you are going to really, 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 really like Real Steel. I saw it with my 5-year-old little brother, and he was... over the moon for it, and I was probably more excited than he was. So I give high marks to Real Steel.
Real Steel strikes me as one of the most honest movies of this entire year. Like, it makes no pretenses about what it is and isn't, and it's in every way looks like it will deliver what it promises from you.
Well, it's really cool, and there's little touches that, like, you know, if you are familiar with, you know, sports movies and stuff, and you want to, like, the villain is this the team behind and this gigantic robot named Zeus, which is the champion of this robot boxing federation. But the people that run it are these, like, this cool hybrid of, like, the evil manager from a sports boxing movie.
Right.
And like the greedy, arrogant game designer from like a future kind of technology sort of movie. And it's like this great sort of hybrid that just feels right and fun. Also, here's a fun fact. Kimi from Lost is in it, and Kate from Lost is in it.
Yeah.
Which if you really just want to think of it as the coolest Flash sideways ever, then just go ahead and think of it like that.
Yes. I'll tell you
I would say go see this movie. It's like box office. It's not been doing great. Everybody who sees it loves it. And it's just, I think it's kind of weird marketing on it. But please, go see it in the theaters. It's fun.
I think I will take my daughter this weekend to go see that. That sounds fun. I just finished an audiobook from a little guy maybe you've heard of, Neal Stephenson. Ever hear?
So, what do you mean? This is something that you saw your friend buy and then...
No. This is something I actually...
You know, I wanted to make that big so we could talk about Steve Jobs. I just wanted to use this as a segue so we could talk about Steve Jobs. Apparently, nobody wants to talk about Steve Jobs and Andrew Grather.
I actually do want to talk about Steve Jobs real quick. And I think it's cool that you put that out there because one thing we haven't talked about on the podcast is how weirdly affected all three of us were by Steve Jobs's passing. And I was not prepared for this. I have, and we talked about this, but like I have rolled my eyes at a bunch of celebrity deaths in the music world, in the, you know, whatever, pop culture world or whatever. But I found myself weirdly and surprisingly really, really affected by Steve Jobs's passing. And I couldn't figure out why it was. And ultimately I decided that it's just that Steve Jobs was a honest to goodness P.T. Barnum of our time. And it happened during my lifetime. And I saw it firsthand. I saw it close enough that I could roll my eyes at it and find it to be too much. And knowing that it's over with and that the shadow will only loom larger as we all grow older really affected me. And I was surprised by how touched I was by Steve Jobs passing.
I'm hesitant to enter in on this because I feel very, very differently than you do about that. I love P.T. Barnum. Absolutely loved him. Art of Money Getting, by the way, great book. And I will argue till I'm blue in the face that you know, Steve Jobs was, you know, the last 40 years answer to both Thomas Edison and Henry Ford. And very much, you know, this was a guy, and people talk about, well, the Mac was this. It's like, you know, I got a discussion about Justin. It's like, you know, the Apple II was amazing. And people go, well, remember the Commodore PET was first. And the Commodore PET was announced in January of 1977. The Apple II was the first personal computer that was actually you could physically buy and get out there. And Steve Jobs was a guy that, you know, we had the Apple I before that passionately pushed, you know, using, you know, these ideas that, you know, Wozniak, you know, this brilliant engineer figured out how to simplify this thing, how to simplify everything involved in there to take this complex thing and to make it into something that could fit on, you know, the average family. And the idea to say, let's make this thing fit beige colored, have this vision for this technology that nobody else really wrapped their head around and consistently push that. And that's what Thomas Edison did not invent the light bulb. The carbon filament existed before that.
Right.
You had the better vacuum seal in a light bulb that existed before that. Thomas Edison was the guy that put these two elements together and then said, let me figure out how to build this back end system so we can power these things. Because there were these brilliant ideas that existed elsewhere, but somebody had to say, this is how it exists in whole and had pushed through this idea that radically changed that. And there are a number of people like this. I mean, like, I think I'll go on and on about Bill Gates, about how, you know, he's a complex guy, has done, you know, and like Steve Jobs, there are a lot of failings there, but there's a lot of greatness there. And the greatness is all, you know, the greatness in both those men is what's touched my life. And with Jobs, like, that's the thing. And for manufacturing, the fact that, you know, Apple is arguably the most well-run company in the world. That in of itself is fascinating when you look at from their profit margins and all this sort of stuff. And that to me is just, I hesitate to even start on it because I've been a guy that's been studying this guy for years. I read, you know, every biography you could back in 1996 on him when his biggest success was really at that point, you know, nascent, you know, Pixar, but really Next which was not a success. Until Apple was desperate for an operating system and said, maybe there is something to this Unix-based operating system. And, you know, so I understand your point of view. I absolutely understand your point of view, but it's kind of like, man, like, it's like, I see the little bit, because the P.T. Barnum is the kind of guy like, hey, there is no, I'm a spokesman, but there is no show. But I think there's so much substance to what was.
And I don't mean to indicate that there was a lack of substance with Steve Jobs, but certainly he had the ability, to, in his keynotes, in his presentation, he understood showmanship, and, mm-hmm. and I think that resonated with somebody like me, especially, and granted, you know, Apple had a reputation for taking stuff that was already out there and giving a spit polish on it that made it attractive and all of a sudden presented it as though they had just brand new, you know, and that was.
Where you would say a spit polish, you know, a Mac user like myself who went from Windows to Mac who was an anti-Mac guy, an anti-Apple guy for years, and used to argue with my Mac buddy, and then drank the Kool-Aid in a big way, and I would go, man, but it's not. It's so not this spit, because you can only spit polish things so many times before other people can do it. There's a reason that there's this, the idea that it gets to this whole philosophical thing of why people just love their Macs.
Right. Well, regardless, I mean, you and I are not going to resolve this right now, but we can agree that there is a reputation of the Steve Jobs effect, and there's a reason mm-hmm. it's called the Steve Jobs effect, because Steve Jobs had the ability.
The reality distortion field.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, it's like that was something that he had, and that was amazing that it happened in my lifetime. But as far as picks, though, as far as stuff to recommend,
real quick about
Steve Jobs, please.
And that'll be very quick. But for some reason, I've had this thought in my head, and I didn't really have any idea on how to express it.
Best place to have thoughts.
Yeah. Well, normally they don't stay in my head. They tumble out of my mouth with reckless abandon. There's that scene at the very beginning of The Big Lebowski when there's that voiceover monologue talking about Jeff Lebowski and everything, and explaining, setting up the story. But there's that line where it's like, sometimes there's a man, not a hero, because what's a hero? But sometimes
there's a man.
And it's like that, for some reason, like that's, you know, for everybody. And then there's this kind of after the fact debate about like, oh, everybody thinks he's St. Jobs and this, that, and the other. It's like, I think for anybody who really followed him, I don't think that they think he was a perfect person. They thought he was a very important person. And you know, sometimes there's a man for his age, and that was Steve Jobs.
Well, if I were to say, like, my one thing appreciation about him that I think that got overlooked is he's a guy that, if you really follow the details of his career, this is a guy that believed very much in certain groups of people. He believed in the geniuses of Wozniak. You know, how he utilized this, how he roared at these people, that's everything. He believed in them. He believed in that original Mac team and fought tooth and nail to get them every single resource they could, because he believed, you know, where this could go. And you know, and there's a lot of people who deserve more credit for the contributions there. Absolutely. When he found this division that George Lucas was trying to sell off because he was, you know, eventually because he was going through an expensive divorce, and he saw these, you know, PhDs guys who said they had some ideas for computer imagery, and he poured, not just, you know, they talk about like 60 minutes, and for $5 million he bought Pixar. Yes, and then he poured tens of millions of dollars into this company for a decade without seeing a profit on it, because he believed in these guys. He believed in these guys. And if he didn't believe in, you know, Alvy Ray Smith, if he didn't believe in John Lasseter, if he didn't believe in the principles of Pixar, we wouldn't have, you know, we wouldn't have like the great stuff that DreamWorks is doing today and other things today. And he was a guy that put and said, we've got to make it better and better. And these were guys that did that. And that's things I love. This was a guy that not just, you know, he absolutely had this charisma and this weird way of looking at it, but when he found people who believed in it, he kept Next going for years because he had this idea of this better way to design and things to work. You know, Tim Berners-Lee created the World Wide Web on a Next system because of the tools were on there. And he says this, were made for a person like him to go in there and say, just put this here, this object-oriented approach, which was not pervasive then. you know, these things, that was a group of people he believed passionately in. When he came into Apple, you know, he had this reputation of it's, if, you know, he overcame the sort of, if it wasn't his idea, then it wasn't worth it. You know, he found Johnny Ive, he found some other people, took some of those next people and passionately believed in these people. And, you know, everything you can say about him, arrogant, all this stuff is true. But if he believed in you and believed in these people, he made it possible for them to change the world. And I love that. And that's hard for me to say about other technology people, because when I think about some of these people who I hold up and really, they'll talk about how clever they are and how smart they are. But when you talk about, they don't talk, they'll talk about teams in a general scene, but they don't seem to take a lot of these people along with them. And that's the thing that impressed me, was how much he could believe in your idea and champion that and maybe claim it as his own.
Yeah. So my pick is I just finished the audiobook for Neal Stephenson's new one, ReamD. Did either of you guys read that by any chance?
No. I'm waiting for you to tell me if I should read it.
Totally read it. It's a little more predictable than his other works. There's less of a shocking surprise. It's not a game changer, but You can tell this is a case where you can see that Neal Stephenson was deeply affected by something that happened in reality, and it started noodling in his head, and he ended up writing a whole book about this idea. Like, to him, and I'm relaying all this third hand, but at a book signing, he said that, that when he heard about Chinese kids gold farming in World of Warcraft to make money, he just felt like he should just give up writing altogether, because he never could have thought up something so insane as what was actually happening in reality. And that became a big part of what happens in ReamD. And I don't want to give any spoiler for that, but it's based partly in reality, partly in a fictional World of Warcraft X-esque massively multiplayer online game. It's delightful. It's fun. It's a little bit outrageous compared to some of his other works, but I enjoyed it immensely. I highly recommend it.
Excellent. I love Stephenson, and he's one of, and I even love his nonfiction. He's a guy I don't necessarily agree with, but I love his way of thinking. Do you ever read his book? In the beginning, it was The Command Line.
No, I've never read that one.
It came out in like the late 90s, I believe, and it was very much his argument against the graphical unit, against everything I love about computers. Let me put it that way, okay? But it was this embracement of like how great Linux was and why this was better. And he has this problem with artifice and the idea that you get separated from the computer and the computational power itself, which is it's an argument that you could say, well, there are people who just if I need to write a word processor document, I just need to pretend to have a page to do that. But that being said, I love a really thoughtful difference of opinion. And In the Beginning is a Command Line is a really interesting book worth reading. And I won't say that it's dated. It very much, as we get into when you hear people who get upset with, let's say, like Cory Doctorow and people like that Richard Stallman, who have a problem with, let's say, the way Apple does things with a walled garden closed ecosystem. It's a great example of how other people see this, and it's a great idea to see how they would see. You know, they see this missed opportunity. They see a missed opportunity in what the web and everything could have been like if we took this different path.
Right.
And I've made my choice as I sit here, you know, next to my iPhone and my two Macs and everything else. But I love to hear why other people felt differently, because there's a lot of neat stuff in there. You know, one of my favorite things is to go back and look at these old computer books from the 1970s and to see those ideas that people had, this idealism there that some people felt we fell short of. And so Neal Stephenson's a great, you know, thinker on that. So I look forward to reading ReamD, and I'm a fan of his. Like I said, check out his nonfiction, because it's really just – to me, it's just – it's like, I don't agree with it necessarily, but I think, you know, it's a neat way to look at it.
There is one moment that really made me smile in ReamD, where the guy turns on the MMO, the game, and it opens with an image of the world. And he says that this opening of just the globe floating in space is a blatant ripoff of Google Earth, the way, you know, when you load Google Earth, what it does says. But that's okay, because Google Earth admits that they stole it from some old science fiction novel. And something about that tickled me, and I'm like, what novel would that have been? Why would he not say? And then I think about it, I'm like, my God, the only one I could think of, I'm like, I bet it was Snow Crash. And I'm like, wait a minute. Stevenson wrote Snow Crash. And then I realized that that was him being coy, giving a little wink to the fact that he knew that that Google ripped him off.
That's funny. And, you know, it's funny that, you know, that, and I remember reading, I think it was Wired or something, talking about, like, how the gold farming thing inspired him to do ReamD. But you think about it, like, if you, you know, go back to Snow Crash,
which, by the way, still stands up. You would think that it's too late now. Read Snow Crash now. When I first read it, and I don't know if I've already mentioned this on the podcast, when I first read it, it was clear that it was set in a dystopian future. But the last two times I've read it, I've tried it on for size as a complete anarcho-libertarian paradise where everything from currency to citizenship to the police to everything is outsourced and privatized.
Yeah, and it's a very interesting way he sees it would turn out. But in that, what would be about is you have a protagonist there, hero protagonist to be precise.
As it was, yes.
Poor in this world, but rich in this other world.
Yes.
And so the idea is like, well, you know, that's not that far away from the gold farming idea that, you know, Stevenson was a lot closer to that, I think, than he gives himself credit for.
Yeah. Well, and as he was with the whole idea of the metaverse, I mean, so many of the conventions of the metaverse, I think we see in massively multiplayer online games. I mean, we don't see it as a way to navigate the web like we all thought we would, but we do see it in these other
games. Let me walk my avatar over to your page and say hello.
Exactly. Exactly.
My pick is going to be a Netflix pick, and it's odd for a guy that writes books. I seem to always pick movies.
Weird movies too.
Just finished watching this series. There are two series out there under the same subject. This is the one produced by Canal, which is like the French, like English, whatever production company, and it's Borgia, and it's about the House of Borgia, and. You know, when you had the guy who became Pope Alexander, who was a Borgia, and about the Borgia family, the Borgian influence on Italy, Borgian politics. This is a period in time when you had the Medicis, you had Italy was like four different, you know, separate, you know, countries or nations within itself that they were at war, battling each other. Plus, you had to contend with the French and the English. And you have this very much, you know, when Machiavelli wrote his book, he was describing politics, you know, a little bit later on, but very much of that kind of thing, the machinations that people went through to achieve power. And it's a, you know, it's got sex, it's got violence, it's got nepotism, it's got intrigue, it's got torture. I mean, they have, you know, they have a guy. I mean, it's one of these things. It's just like, I need you to go punish this person. Next thing you know is you see like two guys hanging upside down naked and they take a saw at the crotch.
Oh.
And you're like, I had to look away. Like usually you're like, I'm looking away going, this is too much for me.
And this is all based in reality, based in fact?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Ugh. It's a very well researched, and I enjoyed this. Like I tried to watch Tudors, which kind of like I went in and out of the Tudors, but this so far I watched the first 12 episodes of the season are up there, and I really, really, really dug what I saw. It grew on me. First couple episodes is on the fence, but then I got into it.
So, right on.
And it's very good. It's one of those things like this is – you know how I watch stuff like this is I have my iPad in hand and I pull up Wikipedia and I pause it and I go look up people and I see who they are. And I think that's the way kids are going to learn in the future.
So I'll tell you what, and this is the 21st century equivalent of reading a book and then stopping every time you see a word you don't understand and going to the dictionary. I mean that you're right. This is the way kids are going to experience. That's the way kids who got smart did.
Well, as if I already knew the words.
Yeah.
Okay. I just pretended to know. And then embarrassed myself later on. It's like the word dearth, you know? I think there's a dearth of good ideas.
Well, there's
really?
No good ideas?
I don't think there's that many of them. Or I'd horribly mispronounce words because I'd read them and just, you know, not know how to say them. Then my friends were smarter than me would laugh at me.
Yeah.
I'd get upset and I'd punch them in my mind. Hey, you know what this world needs?
What?
It's a superhero. Need some thrust and justice. As Brian leans back, for those of you don't know, we're actually watching each other in Skype. One of us is in their underwear, and as we say thrust and justice, leans back in the chair, balls high, And now is Body thrust and justice in the screen as he stands up.
Everybody just have a good time. And we gonna make you lose your mind.
Goodbye.
It's been weird.
I just want to see you.
It's really weird. It's much weirder than we want.
Shake that.
If you would like to sponsor this podcast, please go to weirdthings.com/sponsor to buy your listener sponsorship spot, saying whatever you want, for only $30.